You're listening to another inspirational message from Bell Road Church. If you live in the North Phoenix area and are looking for a church community, we'd love to have you join us. It's a great place for the whole family where you can have fun and grow closer to Jesus. For more information, visit us at www.bellroadchurch.com.
And I'll just again say thanks for joining us. It's good to have you here this morning. My name's Tyrone. I'm the pastor here. I'm excited for this message that I get to share with you here this morning. We're going to take some time over the next several weeks and go through this series that we're calling The Problems with Christianity. So today is the launch of this series. And there's a lot of people who don't believe in Christianity. A lot of people don't believe in God. And they'd say, I got some problems with what you believe, and here's why I don't believe, here's the problems I have. And so we're going to take some time and address these. So these are very important, very foundational questions in life that I think all of us should wrestle with and at least have some sort of understanding, because people are saying some very knowledgeable things against God and against Christianity. And so if I have a faith in God, what's going to be my response to that? Am I just going to have this blind faith where I hope I'm right? Like Tony was saying, or what? So I'm excited for this series. Today we're tackling the question, is God real? So someone asks you, how do you know God's real? Prove it. What would you say? How would you respond to that? So we're going to look at that here today. And we're going to look at what I would say is some evidence that there is a God and that he is real. When we talk about is God real? Really what we're looking for is evidence, right? It all centers around evidence. Is there evidence that God is real? Because I can't see him. I can't feel him right now. So is there really evidence? And so today is the launch of this series, which coincides with our book study within life groups. And so we're going to have fun talking about all these topics and questions on Sunday mornings. And in our life groups, we're going to discuss these throughout the week. So this is going to be a good introduction into what we're going to discuss in our groups as we talk about, is God real? And again, there's a lot of people, very smart and very nice and brilliant people who don't believe in God. In fact, let me share with you some of the leading and prominent atheists and what they would say about God and Christianity. Richard Dawkins says this. He's a leading atheist, author. He is an Oxford zoologist. He speaks loudly and a lot on this topic of atheism and religion, all that kind of stuff. So this is what he said. He says, the idea of God is a virus, and we need to find software to eradicate it. Somehow, if we can expunge the virus that led us to think this way, we will be purified and rid of this bedeviling notion of God, good and evil. That's his take on it. And a lot of people would say, yes, I wholeheartedly agree with that. Bill Nye says this. Have you heard of Bill Nye before? The science guy, right? Here, this is what he says. Creationism, I used to love watching Bill Nye too back in the day. That dude was great. Like, he could take this boring topic and make it so exciting. And I thought, that's brilliant. That's awesome. But this is his position. He says, creationism in the U.S. is an embarrassment and a shame, a religious superstition that does real harm to children. Creationism is a symptom of a willful ignorance and an anti-intellectualism that thwarts scientific progress at home and humiliates the U.S. abroad. So that's his position on creationism and the belief that there is a God that created all of this. Okay, so very prominent names, prominent voices in our culture today, and a lot of people say, I believe exactly what these guys say. And of course, everyone's entitled to believe what they want to believe, right? And we shouldn't put down other people for what they believe. And there's a lot of smart people that are on both sides of the spectrum. I think it's important we understand that. Okay, so these guys are brilliant, smart, they're very learned, educated men, and man, just a lot of people would say, yeah, that's it. That's, I mean, God, there's no way that there is a God. So we're going to talk about evidence. Is there evidence to the existence of God? Alvin Plantinga, he said this, he's a modern philosopher, he says that there's at least 24 arguments for the existence of God. At least 24. Plato said this way back in the day. He said, there are two things that lead men to believe in God. The argument from the existence of the soul and the argument from the order of the motion of the stars. So there's two things for him that says, hey, these two things point us to evidence that God is real, that he exists. So we're going to look at those two things and just two other things. So four things we're going to look at here. Morality, We're going to look at the universe. We're going to look at design, and we're going to look at personal experience. So if you're taking notes on your program, evidence number one is this. It's universe. And Adrian, if you could get a little bit of my voice in this monitor, that would be awesome, man. Appreciate it. The universe. The very fact that the universe exists raised the question, how on earth did the universe get here? We've thought that before, right? Many people have wondered that throughout the ages. How did the universe come to be? Why does the universe exist? Now, if you think about it, if nothing existed, would we need to even ask that question? Because if nothing exists, you don't need to prove nothing. But since something exists, that automatically creates this question, why does something exist? Why do we have the universe? So in your book that you'll go through with the study, this quote is in the first week, somewhere in that first week of readings. The first question which should rightly be asked is, why is there something rather than nothing? It's the first question, right? Because obviously there is something. We look all around us right now, there's something exists. So why is that, rather than nothing? So where did the something come from? Has it always been like this? It doesn't appear that way. It appears that something began at a certain point. And science actually has wrestled, but way back in the day, they really wrestled with it. Was there a beginning to what exists here today? And at first, they did not want to accept anything in regards to the Big Bang theory. Scientists rejected the Big Bang theory because it was way too close to what creationists would say there was a beginning to all of this. And so they thought it leads us way too close to the thought of some supernatural being put this into motion. And so actually, scientists rejected the Big Bang theory. Until it was proven by science that the universe actually has a beginning. So science has proven that. There was a beginning to the universe. So the question then is, how did it happen? How did the universe come to be? Why did it begin? What caused it, right? It's really, what's the cause? And so the leading thought, the leading theory is this nothing hypothesis. And it's pretty easy to grasp. It's basically, what caused the Big Bang? Nothing. Well, did it happen? Yes. Then what caused it? Nothing. It happened. Okay, so that's the nothing hypothesis. So basically, it's nothing plus nothing equals everything. That's really what that is saying. Okay, so everything that we have and we see that is around us, matter, life, everything, it came from nothing. So if we put on our thinking cap, we would come to the logical conclusion that that's not likely. Can something come from nothing? So Mark Clark said this way. He's an author and apologist. He said, the logical explanation is that the cause is something outside the material universe. In other words, the cause must be mind, not matter, because matter itself began to exist at the Big Bang. There was no matter before the beginning of time. I've always loved the argument of necessity. And the argument of necessity simply states that in order for something to exist, something has to have always existed. There had to have always been something in order for there to be something. That's the argument of necessity. All right, so let's look at some fun pictures of our solar system, of the universe that we find ourselves in. Okay, so we've got this is our solar system right here. You see all the planets there. You can see us, third planet from the sun. We're the third rock from the sun, right? There you are. You see that arrow pointing right there. You notice what's missing. Pluto was mentioned, but somewhere along the line 15 years ago, scientists took Pluto out of the planet. I don't know what happened, but my kids got into school. They're like, Pluto's not a planet, Daddy. I mean, yes, it is. That's what I learned. No, Pluto's not a planet anymore. I don't know why that is. Some supermoon or something like that. Anyways, I digress. There we are, Earth. We are exactly the right distance away from the sun that we need to be. If we were any closer, we'd burn up. If we were any further away, we'd freeze to death. Life could not exist on this earth if it was any closer to the sun. And then you look at that, there's this asteroid belt that scientists are just in awe of that actually protects us as well. It's outside of Mars, actually, as you can see that. Okay, so this is our solar system. We are living on this planet, the third planet from the sun. We're orbiting the sun at a speed of 67,108 miles per hour, which is pretty fast. That's 87 times faster than the speed of sound. Okay, so on this planet, as we are orbiting the sun, it's also rotating, right? The planet is actually rotating on its axis at 1,000 miles per hour right now. As you sit in this seat on this planet, you are flying at 1,000 miles per hour in a circular direction that we don't feel it. This is crazy to think about how the solar system and how the universe just acts and reacts and how complex yet structured it is. It's amazing. Okay, so we move from our solar system to the Milky Way. Let's look at the Milky Way, and you can see a little arrow that points to where our solar system is in the Milky Way. If that doesn't make you feel small, I don't know what will. Because we think, man, our Earth is huge. And then you look at our solar system. Wow, that's really huge. And then you're like, where's our solar system in this Milky Way galaxy that we find ourselves in? Well, you can't really see it, but somewhere in that area over there. This is amazing. And then you look at this next slide here. This is a size scale in comparison. If you go to the right, you have to go up to 10 to the 15th. That's the observable universe within the galaxy. You go the opposite direction. You go to the nucleus of an atom. You have to go the same distance in the opposite direction, and you still find detail and design and structure and all this amazing things. You go way out there, it still is. You go way into the nucleus of an atom, 10 to the negative 15th power, and it says room for humans to be complex and highly intelligent. It said that one amoeba has enough structured information to fill 30 encyclopedias. One little amoeba, 30 encyclopedias. It's a lot. Okay, all you young people who don't know what an encyclopedia is. They're these books that we had back in the day. They had to have a whole set of them in order to actually study something of, you know. They were awesome. Okay, we don't need them anymore, right? We got all online, but that's a lot of information from one amoeba, wouldn't you say? Okay, so then we go to this big picture here. This is the observable universe. This is what we can see with the instruments that we can actually create. The observable universe. And if you can kind of see, you can barely see where the Milky Way galaxy is if you see the red lettering, if your eyes are good enough to see that. Okay, so Edwin Hubble made the Hubble telescope, and way back in the 20s, he discovered what's considered to be the greatest scientific discovery of the 20th century. As he looked out in his telescope, he realized that this galaxy that we're able to observe is continuing to grow and expand even now. It continues to grow, which, if you think about it, is mind-blowing, guys. Okay, if you got on a rocket ship right now and you went out into outer space, would you ever reach the end? You just keep going and going and going and going and going. And that's one of those like mind-blowing things, like, wow, and it just hurts my brain sometimes when I think about it. It just keeps going, yet this galaxy, this universe, it is still expanding and still growing. And that was his hypothesis. It's since been proven by science that it actually is continuing to grow. The universe grows. What is it growing into? I mean, it's just creating more space as it continues to expand. How does that even happen? That's amazing to think, isn't it? And so then we go to these words that so many of us believe in this book. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. He spoke all these things into existence. And isn't it interesting to think about his very words that when he spoke the universe into existence still have so much power that the universes are still being created. It's still expanding. It is still growing from the words that God spoke at the beginning of creation. It still expands. It's still growing. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger even right now. Which is why we love Psalm 19, because it's so true. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they reveal knowledge. They have no speech. They use no words. No sound is heard from them. Yet their voice goes into all the earth, their words to the ends of the world. In the heavens, God has pitched a tent for the sun. So you look up into the heavens, and they declare. What do they declare? They declare God is real. Basically, God is saying, by everything that you see that's been made, especially when you look out into the heavens, and you look out at night, you see all the stars and everything. Basically, God is saying, I'm here. I exist. Look at me because of what you see. So the heavens are clearly telling us there is a God. Did all this magically appear? Is it possible for something to come from nothing? Can matter suddenly appear from non-matter? That's not possible, is it? And so that's why it's important for us to really put our thinking cap on. And it's hard for us to do because we all have our presuppositions. We all have where we want to land and where we want to end. Even those who don't believe in God, they don't even want to get close to anything that would land them to get close to believing in God. But honestly, if we really put our thinking caps on, we would say something has to come from something. That makes more sense, don't you think? Matter cannot come from non-matter. So this is why we see in Romans 1:20, says, "For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power, and divine nature have been clearly seen." Clearly seen. "Being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse." And so if people would genuinely look at everything that's been created, and you look at the universe, and even life, we'll get into life in this next section here, and look at all of this, it basically, and the Bible would say, clearly says God is real, and he made this. And so I'm not going to spend a lot of time arguing the existence of God, though, from this book, because it's important for us to, especially for those who don't believe in this book, we can't just use this book, what the Bible says. We're looking at lots of evidence today from the universe and the world that we live in. Let's look at evidence even outside of this book. Because if we see clear evidence outside of this book that God is real, that he exists, then we can look at this book that is said to be his word. And by the way, next week we're going to talk about this book. Is this book reliable? We're going to talk about the validity of Scripture. So I'd encourage you to come back next week as we talk through that. That's going to be good. All right. Evidence number two is this thing called design. When you look at the world around us, you see a lot of design. Why does life exist? Okay, not just matter in the universe. Why does life even exist? Can life come from non-life? Is that even possible? And then you look at the complexity of our bodies. How could this and who we are now, how can that evolve from like a one-celled organism, from an amoeba? How can we evolve from that and then evolve into two genders that are able to come together and procreate other life? How likely is that? Most scientists, if they were really honest, they would say it's pretty miraculous that we are where we are in the process of evolution. But they would have to use that word miraculous. It's very miraculous. William Paley, he developed what's called the teleological argument. This is basically the design argument. And the design argument is kind of like every design reflects a designer. That's really what it is. So he, years ago, said, hey, suppose you're walking down the beach. He's walking down the beach, you see a piece of wood. And so your logical conclusion, if you find a piece of wood on the beach, is this fell off a tree somewhere and ended up here. You don't think, wow, this piece of wood just kind of formed out of nowhere right here. That's crazy. We don't think that, do we? So what if you kept walking down the beach and all of a sudden you come across a watch and you pick up this watch? Do you logically conclude, look at all this matter that has come together and formed this watch that is able to tell me what time it is? That couldn't happen. That would be miraculous. What we would say is, wow, somebody made a watch and someone bought that watch that somebody made and they lost it. Here it is. It's on the beach. Okay, that's what we'd say. So this is the design argument, the teleological argument, which basically says watchmaker is to watch as God is to the universe. I would say this, and this is my opinion, but I think that it takes more faith to believe in evolution than it does to believe that there is a God. And some people would say, I don't know, I disagree. Prove to me that God exists, and how do you know, where did God come from? I guess that's the real question I was meaning. Where did God come from? Well, that's a dangerous question, and it's really a question none of us can go into. That's like way out there that we're not even able to figure that one out. What we're wanting to do is look at all the evidence that we have right now to figure out where did we come from? Why does this exist? That's what we're looking at right now. And so evidence seems to point to, obviously, the universe started at some time. There was design in the universe. How? Did it come from nothing or did it come from something? That's where we need to stay, right? And with the evidence that we see, not, well, then where did God come from? That's way beyond our pay grade and our ability to even fathom. Dr. Anthony Flew, he was a leading atheist for decades. And he was a scientist. He studied so many things, studied even DNA, and he came to the logical conclusion after years and years and years and years of not believing in a God. He said, there has to be a God. He said, super intelligence is the only good explanation for the origin of life and the complexity of nature. And the main reason for that was the study of the DNA and the complexity of the DNA and all that kind of stuff. And so we've got his picture here, and here's some more about him. He says, prior to Richard Dawkins, okay, Richard Dawkins, leading atheist today, leading voice today about atheism, this was the guy before him who for 50 years was a prominent atheist. Mr. Flew said that based on recent scientific evidence, he had become convinced that there was a God. I now believe that the universe was brought into existence by an infinite intelligence. I believe that this universe's intricate laws manifest what scientists have called the mind of God. I believe that life and reproduction originate in a divine source. So here's someone who, after studying science and looking at all this, really had to humble himself and come to this place where it's like, man, as I deduct all of the evidence, boy, it's pretty evident there's got to be a designer. There's got to be someone that created all of this. And it's hard for a lot of these guys to come to that conclusion. A lot of people elevate intellect. A lot of scientists and the leading voices of atheism, they'll elevate intellect. Like, well, if you believe in God, then you are dumb. That's just stupid. Like, educated people don't believe in God. And sometimes you feel that way as you're hearing these messages, which is why it's so important, regardless of where you're at. Come on, we just love people. Just talk nice. Just talk to this nicely. It's important that we do that. But they elevate intelligence, overlooking even at evidence. Let's look at the evidence, and let's just be logical here. Okay, so you're telling me we all came from nothing? I just choose to believe that something had to already be there that put this all into motion. I mean, look at your eyeball. How complex is your eyeball? You ever thought about how your eyeball works? That's crazy. Like right now, you're using your eyeballs right now to look at me, to look at what's going on. You can see this. And your eyes, this is just crazy. Your eye works to convert all this information, all this data, and 1 million nerves send it back to your brain, and your brain is processing all of this and helping you understand and discern what you're seeing and what's going on. Okay? On top of that, your eyeballs have the right amount of fluid on them to protect them and to keep itself clean. It has 130 million rod-shaped cells that help detect the light intake and all that, all and process all of that. That's just your eyeball. I think about the complexity of that. That's one of those amazing things that, like, how could the eyeball come from evolution and just all of a sudden develop? Even Darwin himself struggled with this, which in the end, he struggled with a lot of things with his own theory. But he said this, to suppose that the eye, with all its inimitable contrivances for adjusting the focus to different distances, for admitting different amounts of light, and for the correction of spherical chromatic aberration could have been formed by natural selection seems, I freely confess, absurd in the highest sense. Because you look at the complexity of it and the design of it. It's just amazing, friends. And so that's where we go to this book, and the book says, in the beginning, God created everything. Verse 26, Genesis 1, and God said, let us make human beings in our image to be like us. That seems to make way more sense to me than we came from nothing. We just happen to be here, like, you know. There's purpose, and there is design for our life and for everybody's life. So we would echo the words of the psalmist that says, for you created my inmost being, you knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. Amen. Number three is evidence is this issue called morality. Just the fact that we struggle with issues of morality would show us, would be evidence, an indicator that there is a God. C.S. Lewis was a very staunch atheist before he became a believer in God. And he said this was the issue that helped him, that really just led him to believe in God, this whole morality thing. And he would observe conversations, you've done this before, you've seen this before. People would say, I was here first. Or that's my seat. Why are you sitting in my seat? I shared with you, now you share with me. Come on, you promised, okay? It's these types of conversations. And as he witnessed these types of conversation, and he said it came from all people, everyone, educated and uneducated. And his thought was this. He says, now what interests me about all these remarks is that the man who makes them is not merely saying that the other man's behavior does not happen to please him. He is appealing to some kind of standard of behavior, which he expects the other man to know about. It looks, in fact, very much as if both parties had in mind some kind of law or rule of fair play or decent behavior or morality or whatever you like to call it, about which they really agreed. This whole issue of morality. Where do we even wrestle with things like this? Like, it comes out of kids. My kids do this all the time. That's not fair. They got more ice cream than I did. Or you took them out. I need this. They got this. It's not fair. You see that, and we all do it, even as adults, right? We struggle with things that don't feel fair or right, and they're all morality issues to us, we feel like. Like, you know, you go to Disneyland, you stand in line for 2 hours. Let's say you're standing in line for 2 hours for your favorite ride. All of a sudden, this big group of people come in front of you and cut in front of you. How would you feel? You'd be like, hey, it's not right. You can't do that. But here's the deal. Who decided that? Where'd that come from? Who says that's not right? Hey, if it was survival of the fittest, there would be no right or wrong. That'd be totally fine. So this issue of morality comes out of us. It almost seems to be hardwired into us. You see it even in kids as they grow up, right? Think about this month that we're in right now. It's Black History Month. Why does our nation have Black History Month? It's because we're trying to right something that was wrong years ago. So somewhere along the line, people thought it was okay to own people. And that's not right. And so we all say, you know, slavery is wrong. But again, who decided this? Why did we even come up with this idea that slavery is wrong? Because again, if it's survival of the fittest, if we're a product of nature, then it doesn't matter. Other species, other animals, it doesn't matter. It's survival of the fittest. But there's this issue of morality in all of us that shows us that that's not right. Even if you went to a country where they still have slavery and they say it's okay to have slavery, you would say, nah, this doesn't make, just because it's legal here doesn't make it right. This is a morality thing. This issue of abortion that's big in our country right now, it's not a political issue, friends. It is an issue of morality. There are people who think it's okay to murder other unborn people. And the thing that's interesting to me is that everyone who is for abortion has already been born. Yet if they are given the choice beforehand, what would they have chosen for their own self? I think this is an important topic for us to speak out on, guys. We got to speak out for those who can't speak for themselves. I know what God would want. God loves every human being, even, maybe even especially those that are still in the womb. So this is a morality issue, guys. We got to understand this. It's so amazing how we made this political. That's so stupid and wrong of us, right? We're all to blame. It's a morality issue. So the fact that we struggle with this shows that we struggle with morals. We have this moral code within us, okay? Who decides whether it's right to have slaves or abortion? It's a question of morality that points us to there has to be a God. There has to be something outside of us that planted this inside of us. Because again, if we're a product of evolution and nature, we wouldn't care. When the giraffe is killed by the lion, we don't say, that's murder. We say, hey, the lion had lunch that day. But now if a human being kills another human being, that's murder. And that's right to say that's murder, right? So where along the line, if we evolve from animals, it all of a sudden become not right to kill something else or another species? Again, it's this issue of morality that's inside of us. If we evolved, as Darwin theorizes, then we wouldn't care about any of this kind of stuff. But as it goes, we have morality placed within inside of us, and we all agree it's wrong to murder, it's wrong to rape, it's even wrong to cheat on your spouse. Everyone would say it's wrong to cheat on your spouse. So the leading atheist, Richard Dawkins, who we've talked about a couple times, you know, he's someone who really believes all this. He's like, we evolved from animals and we're at where we're at now because of that. But he's someone who's married to one woman and he stays faithful to her. So someone asked, well, if you think we're a product of all of this, we're a product of nature, Why is it that you choose to stay faithful and monogamous to your wife? Because your philosophy would cause you to think that doesn't even matter. And so his response to that was, it's true. And in his words, he says, it's a very un-Darwinian personal decision that I've made. Very un-Darwinian, which if you think about, okay, so first of all, let me say this. I'm really glad that he's faithful to his wife. I applaud him for that. Awesome. Okay, we need lots of people, everyone, to be faithful to their spouse, okay? That's a good thing. So good job of making that decision. But when you say it's an un-Darwinian personal decision, it's a contradictory of terms, really. If we are a product of evolution and nature and all this kind of stuff, then you and I would have no ability to step outside of that matrix and actually judge how it goes. That makes sense? You tracking me here? So the only way we can step outside of something and say that's right or wrong is if there's morality within inside of us. Because if we're stuck inside of this nature, then it doesn't matter. It's all about, you know, take care of yourself, take care of your own. You can sleep around, just spread your seed so that you got your seed continues on for ages and ages. That's all that matters if we're a product of nature. It's survival of the fittest. Am I making sense? And so if we're stuck in that, we can't step out of it and judge it. There are, the lions in Africa are not contemplating their place in the world right now. They're not struggling with, why am I here? Why does all this exist? They're just thinking, hungry, kill. Have sex, produce other. You know, that's all they're thinking, okay? It's just instinct in nature. That's all it is. They do whatever they can to survive. That's it. And if we're a product of that, we'd still be stuck in that. But there's this morality thing inside of us that causes us to think through all this kind of stuff. What's right? What's wrong? Why am I here? All this. It's morality, which really points us to evidence that something outside of all of this had to put this into us. If we're honest, Darwinian philosophy leads us to a very scary place, guys. In fact, it's what led Hitler to create his philosophy on life, which was horrible. It's all based out of Darwinian and evolution philosophy and all that kind of stuff. So what is the rational and scientific foundation that you and I should base our life on? That's the question, right? Because I think it's important for all of us, regardless of where we're at, to be rational, try to be scientific and even logical. And in my opinion, I would say the logical conclusion that people should come to is to at least the consideration that there is an intelligent designer that put all this in motion. Is it possible that there's a mind outside of creation, outside of space and time, that created matter and life? It seems plausible, and it actually kind of makes sense. Because to say that we came from nothing, I think, takes way more faith than to say that there was something that already exists that put this here. It takes more faith to be an evolutionist than I think to believe in a God who created us and gave us life. So Romans 2 says this. It says, even Gentiles who do not have God's written law show that they know his law when they instinctively obey it, even without having heard it. They demonstrate that God's law is written in their hearts. For their own conscience and thoughts either accuse them or tell them they're doing right. What is these verses saying to us? That God placed this within our hearts, this conscience within inside of us that gives us the ability to think through and process what is right and what is wrong. It's hardwired into our lives from him. I think those are three really big evidences that there is a God. The universe exists. There is life and design to all of this. And we have morality. All of us have this issue of morality that we struggle with. It's evidence that there is a God. And the last one I would throw out there is this thing called personal experience. If you had a personal experience with God, then you know what I'm talking about. You've experienced him firsthand, his real, his presence, how much he loves and cares for you. In fact, some of us can point back to life-changing encounters with God that have marked us forever. Like, man, that was a powerful encounter. And I could share stories even of myself. These personal experiences that we have with God, they're so important. And again, they're evidence that points us to God's real. Sometimes The enemy wants to come in and say, no, you made that up. That wasn't real. It's just some emotional thing. No, don't worry about it. And he wants to lie and convince us that it isn't real. So don't listen to those lies. Because God is a God who wants to have a relationship with us, and we have experience with him. That's why I like to say, I don't believe in God. I experience him. Now, let me just throw out this too, because I think this is important for some of you to hear. Don't let your personal experience with Christians hinder your personal experience with God. Sometimes that becomes a pushback, like, well, I don't believe in God because so-and-so hurt me. Or this happened in church, or I get that. We've all been hurt. We're going to hurt other people. And man, I'm so sorry that that has happened to you. But don't let what has happened to you determine whether you believe in God or not. He's either real or he isn't real, and it's not determined upon our life circumstances and what people have said or done to us. So I'd encourage you, lean into him and have personal experience with him. It is possible. And it's another solid evidence, I feel, that there is a God. So here's what I want to encourage you to do. Here's your next step. I want to encourage you, all of you, to get into a life group and have fun discussing this type of stuff. This is week number one. I didn't hit on all that you would read this next week. It's not a lot of reading, but it's good stuff to get you thinking, get you wrestling, and to have give you the ability to live out 1 Peter 3:15 to give a reason for the hope that you have in Jesus. Or maybe you're processing this. Maybe you're still thinking through this. I think that's totally cool. Come and discuss and process this with people, and if it doesn't make sense, if you have questions, maybe you're still struggling. I don't even know if I believe in God. That's totally fine. Feel free to jump into one of these groups and dive into that conversation. We welcome that here. But that's my encouragement to all of us. Next step, get into a life group. Enjoy reading the book, going through the study, having fun with these types of topics. And I promise you that you'll have some good conversations with this stuff. If you're gonna be a part of Bell Road Church, and we hope that all of you are, I hope that you stick around. We'd love you to be a part of the life of this church and this community. Love what God is doing here. But if you're gonna continue to be a part of this, you're gonna feel at times pressure to grow. We're going to push you. I like to say it's one of my spiritual gifts. I haven't found it in the Bible yet, but I like to push people out of their comfort zone into a place where they're going to grow. I call it a spiritual gift just to try to make it feel spiritual, but I just like to push people to grow. If you've been around me for any length of time, you know that is true. You might feel uncomfortable sometimes if you continue to be here, because we just want to push you to grow. Get into a place where you're going to grow. If you're not growing, the opposite's happening, right? So grow, find a place, and so get into a life group. Get into a life group is way more than just making friends here. Okay, that's a good thing. And for many of us, that's what we want, that's what we need. But then for some of us, we're like, it's weird. So I push on this, get into a place where you can really grow. Push yourself to grow and get into a life group. In fact, here's the three things we really want everyone a part of Bell Road Church to do. Get into a group, find a place to serve, and make sure you live a Jesus-centered life. Those are three things we really want to encourage you to do. That's what we want to be about here. Get into a group, find a place to serve, use your gifts, have some fun, make our church better with your gifts, and live a Jesus-centered life. Would you stand to your feet? We're going to pray. Was this helpful for you here this morning? Okay. I hope this gets you thinking. And if you want to talk about it more, then life groups, that's what we're setting this up for, so that you can talk about this more and have fun with this. Really want to encourage you to do that. In fact, you can sign up in the lobby and get to book out in the lobby. You can find, I think Amy will be out there after service. Go do it. She'll help you find a group that would fit you and help you grow. So we're going to take some time to pray and respond to Jesus and look to him. And if you're here this morning and you've never made that decision to commit your life to Jesus, I would encourage you to make that your next step. That's really where it starts. Just begin following and put your trust in him. And here's what it takes. It takes all of us coming to this place where we realize, man, I'm a sinner. I've messed up. I've rebelled against God. But Jesus paid the penalty for my sins on the cross. And so when I ask him for forgiveness, man, he forgives me. Jesus shows us he has the power to forgive us, because he didn't just stay dead, he rose from the dead, proving that he was God. And he offers us forgiveness and life when we come to him and ask for forgiveness and then commit to following him. I'd encourage you, if you haven't made that decision, do that today in these next few moments. In fact, why don't you close your eyes right now? We're going to pray, and I want to give an opportunity. Lord, first and foremost, Lord, I just pray that we would be a people who respond to you, respond to your presence. Lord, that we would be a people who are hungry to learn more about you, to be closer to you, Lord. And I pray that in light of this message, Lord, that you would ignite greater faith in you, that faith grow. I pray in Jesus' name. Lord, for those that need to begin following you, Lord, I pray that you give them the courage to make the greatest decision in their life right now. For those that have been running from you, maybe they made a decision before, but they've run away, they've wandered away. Lord, I pray that today would be the day they come back and they commit to following you. With your eyes closed, no one look around, please. If you'd say, that's me, Tyrone, I need to make that decision today. I need to put my faith and trust in Jesus. I'm going to commit to following him. I'd love for you to slip your hand up right now. This is a sign of you saying, yeah, I'm going to be honest. That's what I need to do today. To say that's me. I need to make that decision. Thank you. Thank you. Put your hands down. Anybody else? Let's say that's me. I really need to commit to follow Jesus. Today is my day. Here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to invite all of you to pray. Pray along with me. You don't have to repeat the words, but just pray these words in your heart. All of us, because I think it's something we all need to do on a regular basis. But if you raised your hand, if you're committed to follow Jesus, come on, pray these words. Pray something like this along with me as I pray right now. Lord Jesus, I realize that I need you. So I come to you right now asking for forgiveness for my sins that separate me, have separated me from you. Forgive me of those sins. Come into my life. Help me to live for you, to follow you, and to trust you for the rest of my life. Jesus, fill me with your Spirit. Give me the life, the purpose, and the hope that you offer, Lord. Reveal that to me today as I commit to following you. Amen. Amen. That's the prayer. That's the prayer. Hey, can we just give a hand to those that prayed that prayer to right now? Come on.
Again for listening to this message of Bell Road Church. We hope you enjoyed it and that God spoke to you through it. Be sure to connect with us online via Twitter, Facebook, and at bellroadchurch.com.